So good morning, Real Life Chapel. I want to say again good morning to all of those who are watching us via Facebook Live, and welcome. Today, you may not realize this right away, but today is Sanctity of Life Sunday. And if you're not familiar, that's the third Sunday of the year every year. And every year we always bring someone in to speak specifically to that topic or that subject matter. So this idea of sanctity of life, what does that really mean, or what is that really focused on? The idea, folks, is that for Christians, hopefully for more than just Christians, life is sacred. And it is a gift from God which is to be respected and protected. So, it's funny, just this week it wasn't something I was looking for or trying to make happen, but you know, you just have these conversations. And I heard of a conversation, someone was sharing this with me. It was involving several members of a congregation. And one of the individuals in this conversation was not simply questioning, but they were declaring that the Bible is not pro-life. And so without diving into any particular passages, which I could, and there are many that would be supportive, I'm just going to throw this out there. You know, into humanity, God breathed the breath of life. In the center of the garden, he placed the tree of life. The redeemed in Christ, we receive the gift of eternal life. We are described as those who are passing from death into life. Jesus declared himself the bread of life. He also said, I am the way, the truth, and the life. The names of the redeemed are written in something known as the book of life. In eternity, Revelation shares that we will drink of the water of life. So, seems to me there's kind of a pretty consistent theme that emerges throughout Scripture. Life is sacred. So, typically on Sunday, this Sunday each year, like I said, I invite someone to speak on behalf of the most vulnerable, the unborn. But today we're going to hear from someone who is a voice for another vulnerable and often invisible segment of humanity. So I would like you guys to welcome Miss Julie Crane. Mrs. Julie Crane is going to come up. She is the founder and the executive director of Harriet's House in Cambridge, Maryland. So would you give her a warm Real Life Chapel welcome.
Good morning. Hopefully I have this thing working properly. You hear me okay? Okay. So today I'm going to talk to you about human trafficking. Human trafficking is a topic that normally you don't hear about on a Sunday morning in church, right? It's one of those topics that you might see it flash across the TV screen. Maybe you have things pop up in your mind when you hear the term human trafficking of a van that has darkened windows coming up and grabbing children, people putting them in the back of the van and then forcing them into human trafficking situations. The movie Taken, a lot of people have seen that and they think about that when they think about human trafficking. It's a very dramatic movie. But those aren't the real stories of human trafficking. So we're going to discuss that topic today and also tell you about how we're trying to combat human trafficking here on the Eastern Shore, because it does happen here. A lot of times people ask me, how did you get involved with something like this? It's such a, you know, different topic. Like, why do you want to help people that are in those situations? Well, in 2008, I went to a Christian conference that was by Joyce Meyer, and some of you may have been there. I think, Angie, you may have been at that conference. And we saw a video where they showed their mission arm of their organization, Hand of Hope, going into brothels in India. And when I saw that video, it just struck my heart, just realizing that prostitution is not something that people always want to be a part of. Now, there are some people that are involved in prostitution. It's their choice. But a lot of times, it's not their choice. And so when I saw this video and how this organization would go into these brothels, bring the women out, they would take them to a safe village that was giving them a new start in life, where it was a safe place. They would give them home for their children if they had children, teach them a new skill so they wouldn't have to go back into the life of prostitution, and just give them a new start. So when I saw that video, it struck me so deeply, and I thought, wow, how can women be living in this type of a life? And what can I do to help with that? So it was something that was deeply embedded in me that day, that I wanted to do something to help women that were in those situations. But then I thought it was just an international problem. I thought it was just happening in places like India and Cambodia and Thailand and all across other parts of the world, not here in the United States. So I began at that time to really search after what God was calling me to. And so I started to take short-term missions trips with a doctor that was used to live in Cambridge. He had started a ministry called ICR. He now takes medical students and sets up clinics in third world countries so that those students can have hands-on with people, but also bring the gospel. And so I've traveled with him for over 10 years. And during the course of those trips, I started realizing that that was all well and good, but it wasn't exactly what God was calling me to. So I looked even further and investigated and found trips that were going into areas that were helping women who had been trafficked. So I took one trip to Cambodia and another to India, where I worked alongside the organizations that were helping women in aftercare programs. And this is really where I felt called. And so as time went on and I learned more and more about human trafficking, I realized that the need for services here in the United States was definitely one that needed to be filled, and especially here on the Eastern Shore, where there are no services that are provided for residential care for women and children and men who have been trafficked. Now, our focus is mainly on women, but trafficking does happen to men, women, and children, boys and girls. There are no barriers. There's no one person that's going to be affected by this. Anybody can be affected by it. It can be the vulnerable. It can be someone who comes from a good family. It doesn't matter. So human trafficking affects and could affect all of us. Okay, you can start. The PowerPoint, yeah. We're going to go to the slide that says the definition to start with, since I already went over the intro. Next slide, yeah. That's okay. I do it all the time when I'm going through it. I go backwards instead of forwards. Oh, okay. That's fine. So there are an estimated 27 million people enslaved today. That is more than twice the number of slaves seized from Africa in four centuries of the transatlantic slave trade. Let that sink in. We don't think that slavery still exists. We thought that it took care of itself, right, with the proclamation. It took care of it many years ago, but it's still an issue. So what is the definition of human trafficking? It's modern-day slavery, which involves the use of force, fraud, and coercion. Those are the three key words that you want to pay attention to obtain some type of labor or commercial sex act. Any individual engaging in commercial sex under the age of 18 is automatically considered human trafficking and does not require force, fraud, or coercion. So say a teenager is involved in prostitution, and it's their choice. Well, they're under the age of 18, so consent, they can't really have consent. So in that case, if they're under 18, they do not have to have force, fraud, or coercion as a requirement. Okay, next one. So what does it mean? Force is physical assault, sexual assault, or confinement, and drugs. That is normally used to keep someone in a human trafficking situation. False promises, fraud, false promises about working and living conditions, withholding promised wages. So the fraud is used a lot of time to lure people in to human trafficking. And coercion, threats of harm or deportation, debt bondage, psychological manipulation. Coercion is also used to keep someone involved with human trafficking. So what we've seen, if you could just go back to that. What we've seen with coercion, the threats of harm or deportation, that happens a lot with labor trafficking. So when someone is brought to this country for a job, then a trafficker can take away their identification. They can keep them in that situation by telling them that they'll be deported and telling them that the police are bad. So these are ways that they can keep them in bondage. And debt bondage is something that if someone's coming here from another country, say a woman was coming here from Mexico to work at a crab picking industry, her family could be forced to pay a large amount of money in order for her to come here to work. And then she's responsible to pay back that money through her job. So that would be debt bondage. Okay, next one. So types of sex trafficking. We see it in outdoor solicitation or street prostitution, escort services, pornography industry, illicit massage parlors, brothels, strip clubs. Do y'all think that happens here? I'm going to tell you about a couple instances. Escort services, that is huge on the internet. So easy for somebody to dial up an escort. It's right on your phone, your smartphone. Girls that have escort, and boys that have escort services, they can have multiple phone numbers. So there's apps you can get, and then that person can call, and that app will be what comes through the phone, where they have that extra phone number. But it is a huge way that prostitution is happening now, because street prostitution is just so blatant, so right in your face. You know, prostitutes get arrested if they're on a street corner. But if someone can get services through an escort services, that makes it a lot easier for that person and for the prostitute. The pornography industry is full of people that are there because of false promises. They may have been told that they were going to have a modeling job or an acting job, but weren't given the details. So once they get in, they have a really hard time getting out. That's the same way with prostitution. Once somebody gets involved in it, there's somebody that's over them, that's taking the money, that's keeping the money, that is threatening them, manipulating them, and causing them to be stuck where they are. Illicit massage parlors. Those have been in the news a lot, especially since Kraft was caught in one in Florida. But we have them here. We had one in Dorchester County. In 2019, the summer of 2019, there was a business that was started right on Route 50. It was right near the Popeyes. So if you have any idea about Cambridge, there was a house that they turned into a business, and it had like a massage sign out front that had an Asian name. And someone that was working across the street from there at a produce stand started to notice some things, that these women were going into work and they hardly had any clothes on. There were a lot of men going in and out. There are some indicators also that you can see in a business that is an illicit massage parlor. It will have the windows are darkened, so you can't see in. There'll be a buzzer, so where you have to buzz to get in. There's a camera that's on the outside seeing who's coming in. And the open sign is illuminated a lot at night. So these are indicators that you can look for. But that massage parlor was shut down. So that citizen contacted the police. They started to look into it, and then they shut it down. So if you see something, say something. If something doesn't look right, if there's a lot of people going in and out of your neighbor's house or in a business or an apartment, say something, because it could be something more. There were also some massage parlors that were busted recently in Wicomico County. I just got a call on Thursday night about a girl that was needing emergency housing because this brothel was busted into and the women had nowhere to go. So these things are happening. We just don't always see them. They're not always in the news. Sometimes they're a little more hush-hush. So you just have to open up your eyes and start looking around. Brothels. A brothel is anywhere that women are living together and working in that industry in one home. So it could be an apartment, it could be a house, it could be a business. So, and then strip clubs. That seems to be a gateway for a lot of girls that one thing leads to the other. So they might think it's, you know, a dancing job that doesn't have a lot of fear to it, but then it turns into more. Okay, next one. So can we change our perspective about prostitution, our perception on that? As I said, I used to think that it was someone's choice, that they wanted to do it, that was their calling, their lifestyle, whatever. But let's look at the life of Rahab. She was a prostitute, and God had a greater plan for her life. She could have said no when the spies came into the land. But they came into her house, into her apartment. She hid them so that the officials couldn't find them. And because of that, they gave her a chance to live when they were coming in to destroy the city. So Rahab was someone who, because of that, she's in the lineage of Jesus. We don't know who is in prostitution, who's in trafficking, who is in the lineage of something powerful. We don't know what God has planned for their lives. So we have to remember that it might not be their choice. And even if it is, it might not be their destiny. So the woman at the well, she was an outcast. And a lot of people could have just, you know, turned the other way. But Jesus knew that she needed love, compassion, and acceptance. And he offered her forgiveness, and she became whole. So this is someone who many people wrote her off, but God saw that there was more, and he offered her what she needed. And that's what we want to be able to do, too, for the survivors of trafficking. Okay. So types of labor trafficking, seasonal workers, you see it in agriculture, domestic work, restaurants, cleaning services, carnivals. So anyone who is not getting their proper wage, maybe they're working long hours, they're not getting paid what they deserve, someone's keeping their ID, keeping them trapped in that situation. Okay. So slavery, it's been an issue for centuries. Think about Joseph. He was sold into slavery by his brothers because they were jealous of him. And God used him in a mighty way to save many, including his own family members. And what we see with human trafficking is that's happening too, is that in families, they are selling their sons and daughters into slavery. The Israelites were in slavery and they needed someone to set them free. But once they left, they grumbled and complained and wanted to get back to the life of slavery because it was comfortable and what they knew, but God had a better plan. So what we see with survivors of human trafficking is the same thing, that you want to help set them free, but they keep going back. So normally it takes about 7 to 8 attempts in getting someone free before they're willing to be free. Okay? So who are the survivors? According to the Human Trafficking Hotline and Polaris, there's lots of statistics that are available, and these statistics are from 2019, where they saw over 22,000 cases of human trafficking in the United States through the calls that they received through their hotline. And I'm going to give you their hotline information at the end. So with this, we find that the age of survivors is adults are the highest number. Minors come next. Or I'm sorry, I got it wrong. Minors are the highest number, and the adults come second, but the unknown is 15,000. So most of the people that call the hotline, they're not giving all the information that they're looking for, but it's a good thing that they're calling and reaching out. So females were the most affected, and those that are U.S. citizens, foreign nationals, and unknown. So foreign nationals are ones that are affected more, but U.S. citizens are also affected. Okay, next one. And there are three types of trafficking situations. There's sex trafficking, labor trafficking, and sex and labor trafficking. So in this, you'll see that the most is escort services. The massage is the second, and pornography is the third that were reported. Labor trafficking, domestic work, agricultural, and traveling sales crews. Now, you might not have thought of traveling sales crews as someone who might be in labor trafficking situations, but if you think about it, the long hours that are required and all the things that go into it really play a part in that. And sex and labor, you'll see an illicit massage, illicit activities, and bars and strip clubs and cantinas, okay? So who is vulnerable to trafficking? Homelessness and runaway. It's said that 1 in 7 runaways will be picked up by a trafficker within the first 48 hours. Prior abuse or violence, victims of domestic violence and sexual assault, about 95% of the women that are involved in trafficking have been abused sexually as a child, and they hadn't gotten the help that they needed. Foreign nationals and undocumented individuals are vulnerable. People with substance abuse issues, unstable living environment, and poverty. These are all vulnerabilities, but like I said, anyone can be affected by human trafficking, even someone from a really good family. So the top 5 risk factors, as you'll see, substance use concerns, runaway, homeless, recent migration, relocation, unstable housing, mental health concerns. And with labor trafficking, recent migration, unstable housing, criminal record, physical health concerns, and substance use. So you'll see that substance use is something that's said over and over again. Top recruitment tactics, intimate partner or marriage proposition, familial, job offers, posing as a benefactor, false promises or fraud, for labor, job offers, advertisement, false promises and fraud, smuggling related, familial, posing as a benefactor, okay? So stages of grooming, you may have heard of grooming before, but that is the process of getting someone broken down and befriending them. So what someone does is they target a victim. So they look for someone who has those vulnerabilities or someone who they see as easy prey. They start to gain trust and information. They can either do that from the person that individually, or they can get that information from family members or friends. They feel a need. So say someone's a girl's posted on social media that home life is just not great. And so they can start to pursue that person and start to work on those vulnerabilities and say, hey, if things at home aren't very good, like I can give you a place to stay. Why don't you come stay with me? And then isolation. They start isolating that person from their friends and family, and then the abuse begins. So a lot of times relationships start out great. They'll be giving her gifts, showering her with new things, or maybe things that she couldn't afford before, or her family couldn't afford for her, a new cell phone, an expensive purse, new clothes, start to lure her in. And then once they do that and gain that trust, then they start to abuse them or set them out to have to do the things that they ask them to do. And then they maintain control. We talked about that manipulation, the abuse, trying to keep them where they are. Next one. So the average age of sex trafficking victims for girls is 12 to 14 years old. For boys, it's 11 to 13. Different tactics are used for boys. Boys have different interests than girls. So it might be that they friend them through a video game, through social media. There's so many options for people to get in there and start chatting with someone without others being suspicious of that. Older guys, for girls, older guys will usually pretend to be interested romantically. They'll buy gifts, get her nails done, get her hair done, and then in return will ask her to earn the money back for the items that he gave. And then once a girl is trafficked, a trafficker might ask her to recruit other girls. Next one. So what is our part? The Bible tells us in James 1:27, true spirituality that's pure in the eyes of the Father God is to make a difference in the lives of orphans and widows in their troubles and refuse to be corrupted by the world's values. Next one. So what makes a person an orphan or a widow? It's one who has no protector or provider. The vulnerable. Charisma magazine said, in the days of Jesus, to be an orphan meant that a child had no one to provide for or protect them. Subsequently, their lives were often tragic as boys became slaves and girls became prostitutes. Does that sound familiar? Think about the world we're living in now, with families divided. A lot of times there's no secure father in the household. They have to split time between parents, and then they feel like they don't have a protector or a provider that's consistent in their lives. So this has led to where we are now. Next. Okay, so we're going to watch a survivor story, and this is a pretty graphic discussion that she's going to talk about. So if you have children that you don't want to hear this, you may want to take them out, but she does talk about her experience with trafficking.
All right, Cameron, thank you. And tonight, a woman originally from Sheboygan talks about sex trafficking. She says she was trafficked and got help at the right time, allowed her to escape. A warning here, some viewers might be alarmed by what you hear in this story. Here's NBC 26's Juliana Falk.
Colleen Stratton is a wife, a mother, an advocate for survivors of sex trafficking. Looking at her now, you wouldn't know she was a victim herself. But she says it all started at the tender age of 5 when she was sexually abused.
I know that 2 things really took root in me, and that was shame and fear. And it really changed me and changed the course of my life forever.
She says her life turned into trying to cope with the pain, keeping it a secret.
So that led me down a really dark path.
And at the age of 7,
I began cutting myself, and just as a way of trying to take that pain that was on the inside and move it to the outside.
She turned to using drugs and alcohol at age 11.
And as the addiction kind of progressed, my life just became more and more out of control and spiraled.
In her early 20s, her parents told her they feared for her life.
By then, I was overdosing on a regular basis.
She says they told her they found a treatment center in Florida and put her on a plane with some money. Instead of going to the treatment center, she went to the beach and used some of the money to get a hotel room.
When that money ran out, I literally lived on the beach. One day I was standing outside of a liquor store and I had just stolen a bottle of liquor. And I was sick, withdrawing from drugs and alcohol. And this man came up to me and he said, "Are you doing all right?"
She says anyone who would have taken a look at her would know she was not okay.
And he said, "Well, I have a place that you can stay. I have a bunch of people living with me, and I can help you get back on your feet."
So she went with him.
There was really no fear about going with a strange man. Like, I literally just, I didn't care anymore.
She says all she cared about was getting off the streets and to get that next high to cover up the pain she was still feeling inside. She went to the house with him where 4 other women were living. She says it was a haze of drugs and alcohol for a few days.
He shot me up with heroin, and I can just remember like coming in and out of it and seeing these women come in and out of the house.
And one day,
he came in with 3 other men, and they all raped me. And he said, "You know, nothing's free in this life, baby. So if you want to stay here, then you can earn your stay."
During her initiation into the life, she was taken to a stretch of highway where prostitutes walk.
The reality set in and of what I had gotten myself into.
Colleen felt like she had no other option, that no one would want her or to help her.
I felt like I had sunk too low, made too many bad decisions and choices, that this was the life that I had chosen and that this is what I deserved.
She says at first her trafficker was charismatic, flattering, and then he became angry, instilling more fear and shame into Colleen.
He used to go from girl to girl in the house and he would hold a gun to our heads and he would say, "Which one of you feels like dying tonight?" And then you'd pull the trigger and it would be an empty chamber.
Colleen says in these moments, she wasn't afraid to die. She was afraid to keep living and didn't know how to leave.
I couldn't see how I had been coerced, how I had been deceived, and that I was just acting out of my pain and just trying to survive.
She says the heroin addiction fueled her to stay. She was being sold 10, 12 times a day.
Every night, every shift that we were taken out to the stroll or taken out to the truck stop or to motels, we would have to make between 800 to 1,000 in order to be picked up by him. And so if we didn't make that quota, either we would not be picked up, we would be left out there, or he'd pick us up, but we'd have a punishment at home waiting for us.
Finally, one day, she was all alone in the house, filled with cockroaches and broken bottles.
I was on the floor, and I had just gotten a really bad beating.
She says she heard the voices of so many women she met while in a treatment center.
There was one nurse in particular that was amazing, and she said, you know, Colleen, here's my home phone number. I don't do this very often, but if you ever want to leave, call me day or night, and I'll come and get you.
So she called the nurse.
And she said, just keep walking. I'll be there. And she did. She picked me up and she got me into a treatment center that was 5 hours away.
She stayed at the center for almost a year before returning to Wisconsin.
I went back to using drugs and alcohol again. And in 2009, I ended up in jail again.
She says she was all alone in a cell detoxing. The only thing she was given, a Bible. So she met with a chaplain and began her true healing process.
I can tell you that apart from Jesus, like, there's no way that I would be here today with the life that I have today, with the peace and the healing that I have today.
Colleen, now a wife and mother to four beautiful children.
I had a doctor tell me after I had left the life that the chances of me being able to have children would be very small. I'm just based on all the injuries and the things that I had sustained. And really, to have the life that I have today, to have four healthy, beautiful kids, and a husband who knows my scars, who sees my scars and thinks that I'm beautiful anyway, really just speaks to the heart of who God is.
Colleen now uses her own story of survival to help other survivors of sex trafficking, giving presentations, meeting with survivors in jail, and fighting for every survivor out there, showing them hope and the beauty in life that lies on the other side when they can't see it for themselves yet. Keeping you connected, Juliana Falk, NBC 26.
And there is a number for help. It's on your screen right here, 1-888-373-7888. Confidential help, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week.
So as we know, our hope is in Christ. And that's where Colleen found her hope. That's where she found her redemption. That's where she found her healing. And that's what we want to offer to the survivors that we come in contact with. Okay. So here are some of the red flags. Signs of physical abuse such as burns, bruises, cuts, unexplained absences from school, inappropriate dress or changes in behavior, someone who's withdrawn, depressed, distracted, stressed out, displays expensive clothing, accessories or shoes, new tattoos. Most of the time they're small, like a money symbol, name, a barcode, older boyfriends or new friends with different lifestyles. Has multiple phones or phone numbers and that cannot talk freely under someone's control. So these red flags, you're not just looking for one, you're looking for several of them that would help you to indicate whether that's happening or not. Next one. So the biggest question, why don't they just leave? As you saw with her story, she felt like she couldn't leave. Some of these things she even said, a lot of victims, they don't realize that they're victims. They blame themselves and believe that they made the choice, so they deserve the consequences. They feel there's no way out. They're ashamed of what happened to them. They fear the trafficker, or they could have a trauma bond with a trafficker. That's when they make a connection with the person who's harming them and don't feel like that they're a bad person. Okay, the next one. Five forms of force, fraud, or coercion where sex trafficking induces or exploits substance abuse issues. You saw that with her: physical abuse, sexual abuse, intimidation, emotional abuse. Colleen saw all of these risk factors. With labor trafficking, withholding pay and earnings, excessive working hours, threat to report to immigration, verbal abuse, withhold denies needs. Okay. So other reasons, she might not be ready to leave the life, as you heard her call it, the life. That's what a lot of times prostitution is referred to as by prostitutes. They're usually trafficking and addiction go hand in hand, and treatment for addictions may be the first step in treatment. So women who've been trafficked need mental health treatment by those qualified to address complex trauma, and some women may benefit from a long-term restorative care program. Okay? And that's where Harriet's House comes in. Okay? Our vision is to combat human trafficking and bring freedom and healing to women who've been sexually exploited through raising awareness, educating communities, and providing outreach, drop-in centers, and establishing long-term restorative care programs. Our drop-in center is located in Cambridge at 409 Muir Street. It allows community members to drop in during the day to have access to resources and referrals, emergency food pantry, toiletries, computer access, a place to rest and relax, offering skill development classes, and screening for human trafficking. Next. So the drop-in center has been open since September 2019, and even amid COVID, we've been able to continue serving our clients. We've served over 50 clients with over 250 touch points with those clients. We've had cases of human trafficking and exploitation, but not every woman who comes through our door has those as her main issue. And we do feel that there is an urgency to open up a residential program, especially concerning emergency housing. Over the last 2 months, I've had at least 6 calls for women who were in emergency situations and did not have a place to go. So we do work with them and try to help them find other resources since we don't have a residential housing program yet. But this is something that we are truly desperate to provide here. So when someone comes into the dropout center, we have a real brief application that we have them fill out. We don't ask for any identifying information or proof that they need services. We just help everyone who comes in. So they meet with an intake specialist. We determine their most urgent needs and screen for human trafficking just through an interview process, just by asking specific questions as we're talking with them and forming a relationship. We refer them to other resources in the community as needed, and we offer help with toiletries, self-care items, and emergency food, and we offer classes to develop skills, which with COVID, we were put on a hold with that for a little while because of the social distancing and the need to have ample space. So beginning this Wednesday, we will be starting our skills development classes where we're going to teach about healthy relationships and boundaries and self-care and helping them to learn other skills such as budgeting and cooking on a budget, things like that. We offer case management for women who have been trafficked, and we help to connect them with residential programming if that is something that they're looking for. We also will be developing teams for outreach that will be established and trained to go into areas at night where prostitution is prevalent, to establish relationships with sex workers and give them information about leaving the life that they're living, and to support them when they do make the decision to leave. Residential care, we have 3 phases of care that we want to establish, and the first care is immediate care. The respite house will be a 24-hour immediate care home for those in need of emergency shelter and stabilization. Women will receive an assessment and guidance to next steps in care, and they'll be given choices in recovery should this be their option. So the length of care will be about 14 days, but we will have an open window there where we'll allow them to stay up to 45 days if that's necessary. The next phase is long-term care, and our goal is to establish a safe house that will provide long-term housing for those escaping sex trafficking or exploitation. Women will receive comprehensive care emotionally, spiritually, and educationally. Resources will be made available for residents to get their GED, continuing education, learn new skills, and become self-sufficient without returning to the life that they're leaving. Length of care will be up to 2 years. And next one. In that program, we will provide transportation for their appointments, job interviews, skills such as money management, social skills, budgeting, cooking, cleaning, gardening, parenting, self-care will be taught in the home. The goal is to help them to be able to heal from what's happened to them, to have new skills developed, and to be able to get out on their own. It'll be a focus with trauma-informed care with an emphasis on individual and group therapy as well as art therapy to promote healing. And the third phase would be transitional care, where we will offer graduates of our long-term program the opportunity to further her independence without losing her support system. Each new graduate will receive support as she gets employment or continues her education. She will be assisted with a safe place to live and help with transportation until she's ready to stand on her own. And then she can stay there for up to a year. So all of this, all these are grand ideas, right? It sounds really good. But the problem with trying to establish these things is funding. So we have, our organization has gone through a mentoring and training program that is continuing now, but the training part of it lasted for a year. And we are being trained by the Samaritan Women, who is an organization in Baltimore who's been serving women for over 13 years. They've recently transitioned into mentoring and training others so that they can open up safe houses and become involved in helping women get free from trafficking. So with this, we have their support. They walk alongside of us and give us all the help that we need as far as training and preparation. But the funding is on our part. So this is an area that we are consistently working in order to go to the next phase, is to raise the money that's needed. So how can you be a part? We always need volunteers. We have a volunteer training to equip you for work. And the next one that's coming up is going to be on Saturday, February 6th, and it's going to be on Zoom at 9 a.m. If you have Facebook, you can look at our Facebook page. It's Harriet's House Incorporated, and sign up through there and join us on Saturday, February 6th to get equipped. You can give tax-deductible monetary donations. Pray, because we definitely need your prayer covering. I think that's probably the most important, is that we have people that are praying and covering us, because this is something that the enemy does not want to happen. He would rather that everyone who's enslaved stay enslaved. So he will come against those that are trying to set them free. And then you could donate non-perishable food items for our food pantry or toiletry items. We do have a website. It's www.harrietshouse.org. You can go on there. There's lots of information on our pages. There's a space even where a donation list is available if you are interested in that. Okay? So volunteer opportunities that we have. You could be a receptionist at our drop-in center. The drop-in center is open Tuesdays and Fridays from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m., so if you have time in your schedule and you'd like to be involved, you can let me know. Fundraising and grant writing, help at special events, join our speakers panel so that you could do a presentation like this. Host an awareness event where you invite others over, or to join you in a Zoom call where I would do a presentation and everyone could learn about what I just taught you. You could host a fundraiser. You go back, or you could join our prayer team. So if these are any areas that you're interested in, then I have information on the in the back. There's two clipboards, one where you can sign up to be a volunteer and one where you can sign up to be a part of our email list. There's also some rack cards that are back there for a little bit more information. But we are constantly adding people to our prayer team. So if you're interested in that, that would be a great way to get involved. The volunteer process, you would attend a volunteer orientation, pay for and pass a background check, which is around $20.50, fill out a volunteer application, meet with staff at the drop-in center for an interview, and additional training would be given to you according to your interest and position. So won't you join us in the fight? Partner with Harriet's House by becoming a financial supporter. You can do this by giving one-time donation, becoming a monthly supporter, or giving a yearly amount. You may also partner with us by volunteering, donating items, and praying for the ministry. So how would you like to be involved? One thing I'm going to tell you about is an event that we have actually tomorrow that is going to be in Cambridge. We're asking those who are interested to meet us at our drop-in center in Cambridge, and we're going to give you a packet of red sand. We're doing what's called the Red Sand Project, and what this is that we are going to go and fill in cracks in the sidewalk with this red sand to represent those that have fallen through the cracks because of human trafficking. And so a lot of it's just to raise awareness and to get other people involved. So if you'd like to come and be a part of that, it's happening tomorrow at 1 o'clock at 409 Muir Street. Next one. So this is the information for the National Human Trafficking Hotline. You can either call or text if you need help, if you know someone who needs help, or if you wanted to report a suspicious activity. These are where you can be anonymous. If somebody is calling the Human Trafficking Hotline and they're looking for help for themselves, they will not contact law enforcement unless it's asked for by the person who's calling. So it is a safe place to call. And we've seen that through the text line, the reports of human trafficking have increased because a lot of times younger people are using the text line. So William Wilberforce, who was an abolitionist against slavery many years ago, said, "You may choose to look the other way, but you can never again say that you did not know." Does anybody have any questions? Thank you. I usually tell that. So Harriet's House. My husband and I started Harriet's House in 2017, and we were trying to figure out a name, and I had heard a lady talk about an organization that she has called Courtney's House, and she said the way that they came up with that is they wanted it to be like a person's name so that, you know, I'm going to Courtney's House. So it's, this organization is for teenagers. So they wanted these teen girls to have a name that would feel comfortable to them. So I thought, well, I like that idea, like going to somebody's house. So I was really praying about, like, whose name could I use? I looked in the Bible at different women's names and just really couldn't connect it. So my husband and I were going through the Harriet Tubman Visitor Center, and we were reading all the things about Harriet Tubman. She's such a woman of God. I mean, she looked to God for everything and relied on him completely. And she fought slavery in her time, and we're fighting slavery in our time. And so I was just reading, and we were walking through, and it just hit me. Like, it's supposed to be Harriet's house. And so I turned to him, and I said, "I think I know what the name's supposed to be." And he said, "Well, what?" And I said, "I think it's supposed to be Harriet's house." And right away, he was just like, "Yes, that's it." And it's no accident that we're in Dorchester County. That's where Harriet Tubman was born. And she took slaves out of Dorchester County. And so I just find that it's fitting that we would call our organization Harriet's House. Amen. Anybody else? And I will be available after. So if you had any specific questions that you wanted to ask, then we can do that.